Checking on the Arts is made possible by the Orpheum Theater. The Communities in Conversation series at Rhodes College continues next Thursday, the 21st, at 6 p.m. with author Barbara J. King. She's going to be talking about her new book, Personalities on the Plate, The Lives and Minds of Animals We Eat. And that should be a very interesting conversation. Rebecca Tuvel is Assistant Professor of Philosophy at Rhodes. And, of course, our friend Jonathan Judaikin is the Spence L. Wilson Chair in the Humanities at Rhodes. And they have joined us today. Welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much for having us, Daryl.
Jonathan, why don't you kind of start and tell us what's going on here?
Well, Rebecca and I have had conversations for a number of years, two, three years. She's a vegan, sometimes vegetarian. I'm a pescatarian who didn't eat meat at all for a long time, haven't eaten any meat for like 30 years. And just in conversation, we wanted to have a conversation on campus about why we eat what we eat. What we eat. What are the ethical implications of human animals? Because after all, we are animals. Eating non-human animals. What are the environmental consequences of what it is that we eat? And Rebecca connected up with Sarah Boyle, who is the chair of environmental studies and sciences. Mm-hmm. We really wanted to have a cross-campus conversation.
Right.
We wanted to bring the sciences into it. And then Sarah connected us to Barbara J. King, who was her former professor from William & Mary. She's a biological anthropologist. She's been writing about our relationship to animals from a scientific perspective for a long time. She's written books like Why Animals Grieve, Evolving God, and obviously this is her most recent, Personalities on the Plate, The Lives and Minds of Animals We Eat. And it's a really terrific entry point into that set of questions. Because the way that she approaches it is to look at what it is that zoologists and psychologists and anthropologists, and in other words, what does the latest science tell us about what the cognitive abilities of animals, of food animals, of animals that we eat are, and therefore asks, what are the ethical implications of this? How should we be thinking about the personalities on our plates?
Rebecca, I was looking at your bio at rhodes.edu, and this is a subject that you've spent a lot of time thinking about and working on.
Mm-hmm. It is. You know, I love philosophy because philosophers have throughout history encouraged us to question our everyday assumptions, and it can be very difficult to do that when we're so embedded in our everyday practices, and eating practices are certainly, you know, perhaps the number one practice that we're most close to, and yet we don't know much about the processes involved in meat production, nor the beings who are consumed. And that's not our fault. I mean, the system is an invisible system, right? We don't see slaughterhouses, many of us, even though 10 billion farm animals a year are killed in this country alone. That comes down to 19,000 a minute, which is an astonishing number. It's really crazy. Difficult to wrap your head around that. And yet we don't see these animals. And then in the grocery store, you know, we'll see images of happy farms on the packaging, and that the animals themselves are not shown with their heads and feet. And so there's a lot of invisibility surrounding the practice. And so I've been interested in, you know, lifting the veil so that we can even know what practice we're engaged in. How can you ethically assess a practice when so much of what it involves is hidden? So that is why, you know, philosophy was an exciting entry point for me into this topic.
You know, a lot of people, of course, are vegan and vegetarian these days, and more all the time. And the usual reasons, of course, are for our own health and the health of the environment and to avoid animal cruelty. It seems like Barbara J. King is sort of taking a different tack in here in letting us know about what these animals are actually like, which is something that maybe not as considered as much as some of these other factors.
Yes. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Well, just, you know, one of the things that, first of all, a couple things. One is her approach isn't actually, she's not a hard vegan. Mm-hmm. She's not a hard vegetarian at all. She calls herself in this book a reducitarian, which is such a fabulous.
That's a great term.
It is a great term. All that she wants to do is to get us to think more deeply about what it is that appears to us on our plates as food, and to understand that actually these are animals that have emotional intelligence. They're certainly sentient beings. And she presents a whole lot of evidence to support the fact that they are far more sentient and intelligent than we tend to think. Just for example, take the issue of our relationship to dogs versus our relationship to pigs. All of us know that dogs are feeling, emotive, individual beings that have personalities. Mm-hmm. What a lot of us may not know is that in South Korea, 2.5 million dogs are slaughtered every year as food. And that cultural difference indicates something about the way that we tend to think about food animals, which is that they're not individuals with personalities that are capable of intelligence. And all through the book, what she does is present lots of evidence to highlight that and to get us to think about some of our paradoxes, or in fact, some of our contradictions when it comes to these issues. Ultimately, what she's committed to is to getting us to think about our relationship to these foods and to reduce meat consumption. If every person simply ate one less meal per day of meat, she says that 450 million more cows or chickens or pigs will end up being consumed each year.
Yeah.
And in a city in which we are so much identified with the pig on the plate, the pig, by the way, is the most consumed animal worldwide.
Sure.
It's not only the case in Memphis. But in a way, our identity as a city is partly connected up with the image of the happy pig. And Barbara King is forcing us to think about, what exactly does that happy pig mean? We know that pigs are intelligent. Otherwise, they would, you know, Napoleon wouldn't be the head character in Animal Farm.
Sure.
As a symbol of an intelligent animal. But we have a completely different relationship to dogs than we do to pigs, and Barbara King wants us to rethink that a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really, really valuable thing. The name of the book and the lecture is Personalities on the Plate. And I think it's very easy for us sometimes to just avoid thinking about these as individual animals and individual animals with personalities. And it is part of what you do and part of what Barbara does here, trying to bring that out, to make people recognize that.
Yes. So there's a tendency to imagine farm animals in particular as stupid and dumb. She discusses how we refer to chickens as bird brains, and we'll talk about, you know, dumb cows. And, you know, that helps alleviate people's, you know, moral anxieties about meat eating, because we do know things are more complicated. And Barbara J. King refers to what you were discussing, Jonathan, as our peculiar duality in relation to animals. She discusses at one point being in the Everglades in Florida and how she saw a sign that said, "See beautiful alligators in the morning, enjoy gator nuggets midday." And how, you know, we'll tell children bedtime stories about sweet chicks and pigs and then feed them chicken and pork at night. And so we kind of have this latent appreciation that things are more complicated, but we've tried to mollify our behavior by convincing ourselves these animals are dumb and they don't realize what's going on. And yet that's not the case at all. I mean, all of these animals are far more intelligent than we give them credit for. She discusses a number of scientific studies. She talks about her book as science-based storytelling, actually, which is a really nice summation of what she's up to. And she says, you know, chickens actually, bird brains is not a bad term for them if we take that in a different, more shiny connotation, as she puts it. They have impressive memories. They can keep straight over 100 chicken faces. They, you know, they have heightened sensitivity, intelligence, and awareness. You know, pigs can play video games. I mean, there's all sorts of cognitive complexity going on, and they are different. They're and even insects and octopuses. I mean, she talks about animals that you know, many of us, I think, would be surprised to learn about some of the studies being done as well on insects, even and personalities there. But
and just to pick that up, you know, one of the things that I've gone back and forth on in terms of my own eating habits is our fish. And when I first became a vegetarian, one of the ways in which I legitimated eating fish, actually, it was a couple of different things. One is my religious framework became more important in terms of helping me to determine where I drew the line. And these lines are complicated no matter where you end up drawing them. Just one example, my daughter, who does eat meat, has often pushed me on these issues and said, you know, there is human suffering when it comes to raising the vegetables that you put on your plate, Dad. So don't get too self-righteous with me about these issues, right? But when it comes to the issue of fish, one of the things that legitimated it for me was at the time the science seemed to indicate that fish did not have the neuronal capacity to really feel suffering is one thing, but to feel other forms of more complicated emotions beyond pain. Well, Barbara King tells a whole number of different stories in here about what scientists have now begun to find about fish's intelligence. And what that does is force me to think about whether or not I ought to be having fish on my plate, right? So once again, this isn't about climbing a self-righteous mountain and insisting that there's only really one attitude that we ought to have and that everyone needs to become vegan tomorrow. It's really an opportunity for people to open their hearts and minds and to rethink, as Rebecca put it, what are our assumptions when it comes to what our relationship to food is, and to get us to rethink perhaps some of those attitudes, not necessarily for today or tomorrow, but longer term, addressing in certain ways our ethical attitudes. And then, of course, there's all the environmental issues, which is a whole nother cup of tea.
Sure, exactly. Rebecca, in your classes with young people especially, I know that, you know, your primary function there is to get them to think about things. Have you seen changes in people's attitudes towards animals?
Yeah, great question. I certainly have. So teaching these topics can be challenging precisely because we're so attached to our eating habits and because our identities are often very wrapped up in them too, like masculinity, the idea that you're not a real man if you don't eat meat comes up too, and religious and cultural and class. I mean, there's a whole – so it is challenging. But I have found that students – for the most part, are once they're confronted with the evidence and once they're confronted with the arguments, tend to take them seriously. And I've had a number of students who share that they've changed their dietary habits in the wake of some of the readings that we've done. So it's certainly been impactful for them to just read what they didn't know.
Sure, exactly.
And that was part of my own story. I mean, I became a vegetarian when I took a course on ethics as a philosophy major as an undergraduate, and just began to explore and really to think about these kinds of issues. And then it became a New Year's resolution, and it's one of the few New Year's resolutions that's actually stuck. But that doesn't mean it hasn't shifted in terms of the boundaries.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, again, like when I began to get more serious about my Judaism, my ethical framework changed, and I'm no longer as wedded to the idea that we can have a universal ethical framework when it comes to this that's going to apply to everybody. But I am committed to the idea that everybody should at least think about what their ethical framework is when it comes to what it is that they eat.
The next Communities in Conversation series lecture is next Thursday, March 21st at 6 p.m., and this will be in Blunt Auditorium in Buckman Hall, and of course a reception at 5:30. It is Barbara J. King talking about her book, Personalities on the Plate, The Lives and Minds of Animals We Eat, something that I think we should really all think about. If you'd like to know more about Communities in Conversation, you can go to Facebook, communities.in.conversation, Twitter, or Instagram. And if you'd like more information, you can actually contact Dr. Judakin at 843-3292 or judakinj@rhodes.edu. My guest today, Dr. Jonathan Judakin, the Smith L. Wilson Chair in the Humanities at Rhodes, and Rebecca Tuvel, Assistant Professor of Philosophy at Rhodes. And thank you both for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Daryl.
Checking on the Arts is made possible by contributing listeners and by the Orpheum Theater presenting Fiddler on the Roof, March 19th through 24th. Featuring the Broadway classics Tradition and If I Were a Rich Man, Fiddler on the Roof will introduce a new generation to this celebration that raises its cup to joy, to love, to life. Details at orpheum-memphis.com.